enthusiast and skilled hacker we'll call Danny, decided to see if he couldn't find a way to get his hands on the super-secret encryption software, the source code, from one of the top manufacturers of secure radio systems. He was hoping a study of the code would enable him to learn how to eavesdrop on law enforcement, and possibly also use the technology so that even the most powerful government agencies would find it difficult to monitor his conversations with his friends. The Dannys of the shadowy world of hackers belong to a special category that falls somewhere in between the merely curious but entirely benign and the dangerous. Dannys have the knowledge of the expert, combined with the mischievous hacker's desire to break into systems and networks for the intellectual challenge and for the pleasure of gaining insight into how technology works. But their electronic breaking and entering stunts are just that, stunts. These folks, these benign hackers, illegally enter sites for the sheer fun and exhilaration of proving they can do it. They don't steal anything, they don't make any money from their exploits, they don't destroy any files, disrupt any network connections, or crash any computer system. The mere fact of their being there, snaring copies of files, and searching emails for passwords behind the backs of security and network administrators, tweaks the noses of the people responsible for keeping out intruders like them. The one-upsmanship is a big part of the satisfaction. In keeping with this profile, our Danny wanted to examine the details of his target company's most closely guarded product just to satisfy his own burning curiosity and to admire whatever clever innovations the manufacturer might have come up with. The product designs were, needless to say, carefully guarded trade secrets, as precious and protected as just about anything in the company's possession. Danny knew that. And he didn't care a bit. After all, it was just some big nameless company. But how to get the software source code? As it turned out, grabbing the crown jewels of the company's secure communications group proved to be all too easy, even though the company was one of those that used two-factor authentication, an arrangement under which people are required to use not one, but two separate identifiers to prove their identity. Lingo. Two-factor authentication. The use of two different types of authentication to verify identity. For example, a person might have to identify himself by calling from a certain identifiable location and knowing a password. Here's an example you're probably already familiar with. When your renewal credit card arrives, you're asked to phone the issuing company to let them know that the card is in possession of the intended customer and not somebody who stole the envelope from the mail. The instructions with the card these days generally tell you to call from home. When you call, software at the credit card company analyzes the ANI, the automatic number identification, which is provided by the telephone switch on toll-free calls that the credit card company is paying for. A computer at the credit card company uses the calling party's number provided by the ANI and matches that number against the company's database of cardholders. By the time the clerk comes on the line, her or his display shows information from the database giving details about the customer. So the clerk already knows the call is coming from the home of a customer. That's one form of authentication. The clerk then picks an item from the information displayed about you, most often social security number, date of birth, or mother's maiden name, and asks you for this piece of information. If you give the right answer, that's a second form of authentication, based on information you should know. At the company manufacturing the secure radio systems in our story, every employee with computer access had their usual account name and password, but in addition, was provided with a small electronic device called Secure ID. This is what's called a time-based token. These devices come in two types. One is about half the size of a credit card, but a little thicker. Another is small enough that people simply attach it to their keychains. Derived from the world of cryptography, this particular gadget has a small window that displays a series of 6 digits. Every 60 seconds, the display changes to show a different 6-digit number. When an authorized person needs to access the network from off-site, she must first identify herself as an authorized user by typing in her secret PIN and the digits displayed on her token device. Once verified by the internal system, she then authenticates with her account name and password. For the young hacker Danny to get at the source code he so coveted, he would have to not only compromise some employee's account name and password, not much of a challenge for the experienced social engineer, but also get around the time-based token. Defeating the two-factor authentication of a time-based token combined with a user's secret PIN code sounds like a challenge right out of Mission Impossible. But for social engineers, the challenge is similar to that faced by a poker player, who has more than the usual skill at reading his opponents. With a little luck, when he sits down at a table, he knows he's likely to walk away with a large pile of other people's money. Storming the Fortress. Danny began by doing his homework. Before long, he had managed to put together enough pieces to masquerade as a real employee. He had an employee's name, department, phone number, and employee number, as well as the manager's name and phone number. Now was the calm before the storm, literally. Going by the plan he had worked out, Danny needed one more thing before he could take the next step, and it was something he had no control over. He needed a snowstorm. Danny needed a little help from Mother Nature in the form of weather so bad that it would keep workers from getting into the office. In the winter in South Dakota, where the manufacturing plant in question was located, anyone hoping for bad weather did not have very long to wait. On Friday night, a storm arrived. What had begun as snow quickly turned to freezing rain, so that by morning, the roads were coated with a slick, dangerous sheet of ice. For Danny, this was a perfect opportunity. He telephoned the plant, asked for the computer room, and reached one of the worker bees of IT, a computer operator